TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's raised by Wolves.
Rose looks to go. 2 seconds. Rose off balance. It doesn't matter because he drilled it. Derrick Rose.
It is raised by Wolves on Score North on 1500 and the Score North mobile app. Rami Makhlouf here along with Wolves reporter Danny Cunningham. You read his thoughts on your local basketball team at scorenorth.com and the Score North mobile app. Manny Hill on the other side of the glass. And Derrick Rose got a book coming out, including in that book about his time so far here in Minnesota. We don't know if that time is over yet, but thoughts on Tom Thibodeau, the Jimmy Butler saga, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins. We'll get into all that coming up at about 1:20. But wanted to start off the show with the first substantial rumors, I would say, of the Gerson Rosas era, Danny.
I would definitely call these substantial. I don't know how likely they are, but it's a good thing to see the Wolves involved in this type of rumor. And that rumor that we're talking about is that they are going to have interest in a restricted free agent D'Angelo Russell, currently of the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay. And I know you're a big D'Angelo Russell guy. You were a big Nets guy this year. You said they
I have been a big Nets guy.
They're one of the more entertaining teams in the league, according to Danny Cunningham.
They are very entertaining. They have a lot of fun. I really admired the way that they built their team after just a disastrous trade that they made in 2013, I think it was, or 2012?
2013.
Yeah. Thank you, Manny.
Was that the Paul Pierce trade?
Yeah, the Kevin Garnett trade where they gave up a King's ransom for guys that were too old to play in the NBA.
Right.
that one, yeah. It destroyed the future of that franchise, but I really admire the way that they built coming off of that because they hadn't had first-round draft picks, or at least good ones. I mean, the years that they gave up their own pick, or the years in between, they gave up swap rights to Boston. So when Boston was good, Brooklyn was not. Boston would be picking like third, and Brooklyn was picking 27th.
Right.
So I admire the way that they built their team, and D'Angelo Russell was a guy that they got from the Lakers, and in getting him, they took on a really bad contract in Timofey Mozgov, but that's how they got a guy like that who the Lakers had kind of written off, and it worked out really well for Brooklyn so far.
Okay, let's reverse engineer this thing. First of all, D'Angelo Russell having his best season to date, had his best season to date, I should say.
Yes.
Just over 21 points per game, shot over 43% from the field, 7 assists per game. Why are the Nets not going to retain him, or possibly not going to retain him?
So there's this other point guard in the NBA that's a free agent this year by the name of Kyrie Irving. He played for the Boston Celtics most recently. He had played for the Cavs prior to that. He's going to be a free agent. Yeah, okay. He's been in some big games before and done some really good things in the NBA. He's a free agent this summer as well, and the Nets are a team that's going to have interest in him, and I think there's mutual interest there. I'm not saying Kyrie's going to end up in Brooklyn, but I think it's one of the more likely scenarios that he does. And if Kyrie ends up in Brooklyn, that means D'Angelo Russell is probably looking for a new home.
Okay.
That would only make sense.
When do they have to decide whether or not they want to make an offer to him as a restricted free agent?
So he will be extended the qualifying offer to make him restricted. That's a formality. It's like 1 year. I forget what it would be for his draft slot, but it's nothing close to what he'll be able to get on the open market.
Okay.
But
it's one of the higher qualifying offers.
Yeah, he was the number two overall pick. Yep. Behind. I want to say it's around $9 million, but still, that's kind of irrelevant here. So he'll be offered that, and he doesn't have to accept or decline. I know we just got done with the Twins show, but the qualifying offer in baseball is far different than the qualifying offer in basketball. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have to accept or decline, but what that gives Brooklyn is the rights to match any offer sheet that he's given. So Russell can go out and seek an offer from any other team, and he can sign that offer sheet. I haven't thought about this at all, but let's say the Utah Jazz give him a maximum contract. He signs with the Utah Jazz at offer sheets. The Brooklyn Nets then have 72 hours from the minute that D'Angelo Russell's pen touches the paper to match that offer sheet. If they decide to match it, there's nothing Utah can do about it. He remains with the Brooklyn Nets.
All right. Okay. So they'll extend the qualifying offer, and then they can enter into negotiations with Kyrie Irving, and then so they'll have ample time to figure out the Kyrie situation, and then can make a decision on D'Angelo Russell.
The thing that would worry me if I were a Nets fan and figuring all this out is that yeah, the Nets have ample time to figure out the Kyrie Irving situation, but Kyrie Irving's situation might not follow your ideal timeline.
Right.
I think we've learned that Kyrie Irving's a bit of a strange guy, and he doesn't always do things by the book, and this could be one thing that he doesn't do by the book. It could take Kyrie more time to decide on his future than it could, than the time a lot of the Nets have to react to a D'Angelo Russell offer sheet signing. If Russell signs an offer sheet right away, which would be, I believe July 4th is the first day that you can actually sign a contract. Mm-hmm. If he signs right away, that could be bad news for the Nets because you don't know if Kyrie Irving is going to be decided by July 7th when your matching rights expire.
Right. So they could be left in a lurch, so to speak.
Potentially, yes.
If they don't,
that's the worst case scenario.
With one of those two guys,
that's the worst case scenario. But yes, that is possible. I would deem that an outside possibility, but it's possible.
All right, you mentioned the Jazz in your hypothetical there of a max contract offer. Other teams, according to this report from Shan Serrania of The Athletic and Stadium, are the Pacers, the Magic, and of course the Nets have interest in him, depending on how the Kyrie Irving thing plays out. Another report said that he's going to be looking for close to a max contract or expected to seek a max contract that would pay him $27 million per season.
Yeah.
Is somebody giving that to D'Angelo Russell? That's what he's going to seek.
Is somebody
giving that to him? And do you think he's worth it?
I'm not sold on him exactly being worth that much money. I think he's a $20 million a year player, but I don't know that he's a $27 million maximum player. I think someone will at the very least get very close to it. I don't know that I would want to go that high. But I think that if he doesn't get the max, he gets very close to the max.
See, and I don't know how you guys feel about this. The max contract in the NBA, it has a weird stigma attached to it because everybody thinks, well, if you're getting a max contract, well, you better be a top five, top 10 player. But when you cap the limit or when you cap how much a guy can make in a contract, a lot of guys who aren't in that tier are going to be getting that money because they're going to hit the market. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a bidding war for them and the price is going to get driven up to or close to the max contract. That's what happens when you cap how much a guy can make. The D'Angelo Russells of the world are going to be making as much or close to the LeBron James of the world. It's crazy, but that's what the system has made.
And let me ask you this, because how many teams out there have the ability to sign a max free agent this summer?
I don't know. Five or six.
The Lakers, the Knicks have two max slots. The Nets have a max slot.
The Clippers
have max slots. There are a lot of max slots out there.
Right.
But how many max players are there out there? Like truly worth the max? Because that's where you bring up D'Angelo Russell might not be deserving of the max, but he could get the max because some teams got money. Chris Middleton from the Bucks the same way. He's not a max level player, but he could get the max from somebody because someone's going to miss out on someone else and they're going to have all this money. Jimmy Butler is probably not a max level contract guy, but he can absolutely get the max this summer because so many teams have that type of cap space to make it happen.
Right. If the system was fair, there would be a way for LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard to get paid more than anybody else.
Yeah,
but when you cap how much guys can make, like I said, the D'Angelo Russells of the world make the same as the LeBron James of the world. So I'd be tempted to give him a max contract if I could afford it, Manny. Would you be scared off of a max contract for D'Angelo Russell?
I don't know if I want to give him the max, but... The problem is you got another guy on this roster right now who's making the max,
and that's
nowhere
near
worth it.
That's what I was just going to get to.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because I would much rather, if I'm going to give the max to somebody, I would much rather give it to D'Angelo Russell than Andrew Wiggins. But the problem is Andrew Wiggins, and this is what is hurting the Wolves right now, is Andrew Wiggins is on a max contract of his own, and the Wolves aren't even getting half of the sort of production out of him that they would get out of a D'Angelo Russell.
Right, which is what I was just about to get to. Like I said, reverse engineering this thing and now getting to the last part of it. If D'Angelo Russell to the Wolves is a thing that's going to happen, how does that happen? Because our understanding is that they are very strapped for cash as far as the salary cap goes.
Oh, that's understood.
And there aren't a lot of ways to free up cash unless you can find somebody to take Andrew Wiggins and that max contract off your hands.
It would have to be a sign and trade.
Is there money, enough money anywhere else on the roster that you could get rid of to bring in D'Angelo Russell without getting rid of Andrew Wiggins? Is it possible?
Without getting rid of Andrew Wiggins?
Yes.
I I haven't done the math on this. You would have to start with getting rid of Jeff Teague and Gorgie Jang right away. But even then, I don't know that that opens up a max slot because you've got that all that money tied up in Andrew, and you also have a lot of money now being tied up in Karl-Anthony Towns, who is obviously worth it, but he's no longer making just the $7 million a year that he made last year. Now he's on a 5-year, $158 million deal. So he's got a substantial price tag with him too. I don't think that without getting rid of Andrew, you could open up a max slot. You'd have to get rid of Andrew, Gorgie, and Jeff Teague.
Okay. So this that has to happen.
If you wanted to just go out and sign him and hope that the Nets don't match. Like, if you wanted to just traditionally sign him as a free agent, you would have to do a lot of work to make that happen.
Okay.
A lot of work.
But do you think a sign-and-trade is possible?
It's possible, but it's unlikely. Because sign-and-trades are really difficult to pull off in today's NBA. And I'm not positive what the apron number is, but if you do receive a player in a sign-and-trade, you're then subject to a hard cap for the rest of that season, which complicates things even further. That's why we don't see a ton of sign-and-trades. What's the last sign-and-trade in the NBA that you remember?
Scottie Pippen.
I mean, I remember one more recently than that, but that's my point, exactly. They're not a very common thing because teams don't want to be subject to a hard cap, and it's a hard thing to pull off. And aside from having to shell out all of this money to get D'Angelo Russell, you also then have to give up more assets to make it happen. And the money's going to have to match to make that happen too. So you're going to have to look into giving up Dario Saric or maybe Robert Covington and Jeff Teague to try and get D'Angelo Russell in the building. And then at that point, is it worth it?
So how realistic is this?
Not very.
After all this talk.
Not very realistic.
D'Angelo Russell to the Wolves. It's not very realistic after all.
There is a path. There's a path to make it happen. I just don't think it's a very likely thing that it does happen.
Have you played around with the trade machine to see how you could make this happen?
You really can't in the trade machine because the trade machine doesn't allow you to trade, well, draft picks. And you can't trade. Well, the trade machine's not to be like, oh, both teams would say yes to this. The trade machine is the money works.
Right.
That's what the trade machine is.
Yeah.
So what?
And still, the trade machine hasn't updated for 1920 yet, has it? Is it still on the 18-19?
No, and D'Angelo Russell is a free agent, so you can't trade him.
Right.
This is contingent upon the Wolves and D'Angelo Russell essentially agreeing on a contract, Brooklyn getting Kyrie Irving, and then the Wolves and Brooklyn agreeing on compensation that matches the money of D'Angelo Russell's contract to trade for him. It would be an incredibly difficult thing to pull off. I will say this, though. The Wolves have a lot of creative people in their front office, and if there are people in the NBA that could get it done, I think they've got a couple of them. I just don't know if it's likely.
Okay. I know one guy who would like to see it is Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yeah, he'd be all for it.
Who liked a tweet from the Bleacher Report referencing that report from Shams Charania that the Wolves were among the teams interested in D'Angelo Russell, and then had an Instagram post where he, I think it was just tagging D'Angelo Russell and eye emojis. He stole the old Matthew Collar gimmick of the eye emojis
at
D'Angelo Russell.
So Towns and D'Angelo Russell are close friends. If you remember when the Nets were playing Philadelphia in the first round of the playoffs this year, Carl went to their first home game, game 3 at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. He and D'Angelo Russell are really close. They obviously went number 1 and number 2 in the 2015 draft. So they've got a relationship there. They're good friends. It's not as if he's just doing this because, oh, I saw a good player linked to the team that I'm signed up to play for the next 5 years. It's because there is a legitimate friendship there already.
How do they make this happen?
I already laid it out for you. There are not many avenues to make this happen. There are a couple, but they're going to be very difficult to pull off, involve a lot of moving pieces and parts. And I think it's mostly contingent on Kyrie Irving becoming a Net. That has to happen before we can really even think about it.
Right, because otherwise the Nets are going to do what they have to do.
Yeah, why would the Nets give up D'Angelo Russell if they don't get Kyrie Irving? Like, a lot of times when sign-and-trades happen, it's because of that. Like, Chris Paul wasn't necessarily a sign-and-trade because he agreed to opt into his contract and then get traded, so there were different rules. But the last one that I can think of, and I'm sure I'm missing one, but was LeBron James to the Heat. That was really a sign and trade. It wasn't the Heat didn't just sign LeBron. LeBron actually signed that contract with the Cavs, and then the Cavs traded him to Miami.
Really?
Yeah. The decision was
him. I must have forgot that.
The Cavs, and because the money was different, and this was under a different collective bargaining agreement, so the rules were a little bit different, but the Heat were subject to a hard cap LeBron's first year in Miami. The Cavs, I believe, got two first-round picks and a second-round pick back in exchange for LeBron. So the Cavs, while LeBron was obviously the best asset in basketball at the time, while he walked out the door, the Cavs didn't exactly get nothing for him. They got something. It doesn't compare to the value of LeBron, but they actually got something for LeBron walking out the door, which in turn did help them to build a team that won a title 6 years later.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on the D'Angelo Russell rumors for you here on Raised by Wolves. We got to hit a quick break. Not rumors when it comes to what Derrick Rose had to say about his time so far and probably all of his time here in Minnesota after these quotes went public. Touched on the Tom Thibodeau era, the Jimmy Butler saga, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and did not hold back. If you missed these comments by Derrick Rose, you're going to want to stay tuned to Raised by Wolves on Score North on 1500 and the Score North mobile app.
Feel like you got enough to do already? I do. That's why I use Shipt same-day delivery to keep up with my busy life. They know the snacks I like down to the extra creamy in my peanut butter. I can get deliveries at home, on set, or even when I'm away on vacay. And my personal shopper, Amber, she's got my back. As in, she asks them to check the back if it's not on the shelf. Shipt. Delight in every delivery. Learn more at Shipt.com/hi.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, who are you?
Score North.
What?
Score North.
What?
Minnesota sports.
What?
Anytime.
What?
Anywhere.
What?
ScoreNorth.com.
Raised by Wolves on Score North on 1500 and the Score North mobile app, one of three ways for you to listen to Score North on the go. You can type live.scorenorth.com into your web browser. If you have an Amazon Alexa device, just say Alexa, open Score North, or go get that aforementioned Score North mobile app available in the Apple and Google Play stores. It's free, and you can listen live and on demand via the Score North app. The longer you listen live, the more points you rack up for potential rewards. The Score North mobile app is also your one-stop shop for all written content on scorenorth.com, and I'm sure plenty of Wolves written content up there from young Danny Cunningham, who's my co-host today.
Always Wolves written content. That's Wolves. All we do
create is content.
Yeah, content. I'm a content machine.
You know who else is a content machine? Derrick Rose, who just had a documentary.
I see what you did there.
About his life and his struggles, and now has a book coming up about his life and his struggles called I'll Show You. And obviously, a small part of the Derrick Rose story is the time that he spent here in Minnesota. Maybe more time coming up, in all likelihood. Not more time coming up because of the contract stuff we just talked about and these quotes that are part of this book about his time in Minnesota. And two things happened while I was reading this. One, I was not so surprised by. I've been a Jimmy Butler apologist and sympathetic to his gripes and why he wanted to leave Minnesota. I don't necessarily agree with how he did it, but I understand why he did it. And I don't think Jimmy Butler is the bad guy that a lot of people paint him to be. And many have taken exception with my perception of Jimmy Butler since coming here to Minnesota. So I wasn't surprised at all that this further strengthened or backed up what I thought about the whole Jimmy Butler situation. I did not expect to read this, though, and feel sympathetic to Tom Thibodeau. That is not something I saw coming when I started to read these comments. Let's get to Thibodeau in a second. Let's start with the stuff about Jimmy Butler and what happened there. On Jimmy Butler and his trade request and the resulting chaos that ensued, Rose said he and Butler talked quite a bit about what was happening. Rose said he counseled Butler, quote, not to lose your leverage, while he also tried to become a veteran leader to hold the Wolves together. Quote, look, it wasn't his fault, Rose wrote of Butler's situation and trade request. It's the league's fault. Nothing against Karl-Anthony Towns. He's cool and he's good, but you get these kids and you spoil them before they achieve anything. One page later, Rose adds, Jimmy was feeling, why'd you all pay them first? And I was the one that got you to the playoffs. That's all it was. Jimmy wasn't doing it right, though he was right. Regarding the infamous practice, should we stop there and address what he said there before we get to the practice?
We can, yeah.
Okay. He's got a point.
He does have a point. I understand Jimmy Butler wanting to be paid first. He's one that did get them to the playoffs. And obviously we now know just how big of a mistake. And I think a lot of people here knew at the time how big of a mistake signing Andrew Wiggins to that contract was. So I understand that. And he does have a point. He didn't go about it the right way. As Derrick Rose says, there's a right way to go about it and a wrong way to go about it. And Jimmy Butler probably took the wrong avenue to do this if he wanted to get that accomplished. I understand him wanting to get paid before the kids did. I get that, especially because, you know, the time for him to sign big money contracts is running out. He's not exactly the youngest guy in the world anymore. Jimmy Butler's 30 years old at this point, I do believe.
Let me ask you this, though, because we're all sitting here, and Manny, I heard you say, right? That we all agree that Jimmy Butler had a point here, right?
Yes. Yep.
And we all say he didn't handle it right. Derrick Rose says he didn't do it right, even though he was right. Once it gets to that point, and those two guys get those contracts, so you're obviously not getting that contract. If you just look at the money, Jimmy Butler knew he wasn't getting paid here. Was there any way for him to force his way out of Minnesota without looking like the bad guy?
Yeah, don't have a practice that just destroys a team. That probably would have been step one to going out in a better way.
But how long was this going on before he showed up to that practice?
That part's not necessarily all on him, but don't do what you did. Don't have that infamous practice.
You still have to come in and be a professional.
Yeah. How many guys have requested trades before and not destroyed teams? This is the exception. Yes, teams suffer when a star player requests a trade. It happens in the NBA. It happens in the NFL. It happens in baseball. But how many teams are imploded because of it?
See, if I'm the Wolves, I try and do what the Pelicans did, and the NBA basically forced them to play Anthony Davis. The Pelicans saw no benefit in playing Anthony Davis, and they basically told him, go home and we'll let you know when you're traded, because it looked like they were at a point of no return, and the league was like, look, people are paying to see Anthony Davis. You basically have to play him. If I'm the Wolves, that's what I do with Jimmy Butler. He doesn't even show up to a practice.
Yeah,
and I don't even give him the chance to wreck this team.
I agree with you, but even when you do that.
And not only
did Anthony Davis, when he was forced to show up, but he didn't make a scene. He didn't try and actively destroy that locker room.
Sure, but if I'm Jimmy Butler, first of all, not only did they not tell him not to show up to practice, they were asking him to come and practice and asking him to play while he clearly did not want to be here and was trying to force his way out. They asked for trouble. Mm-hmm. When you have a disgruntled employee, you have to address that situation and either make them happy, make them feel like they're whole again.
Sure.
Or you have to dispense of them in some form or fashion. You don't invite the disgruntled employee in and say, dude, come into work. We need you.
Yeah.
We need you. That you send him away or somehow make him whole and make him happy.
No one's saying that the Wolves were error-free in the way that they handled this either. There's fault on both sides. It's not as if there are Wolves apologists out there going, the Wolves handled this the exact way they should have. This is all Jimmy Butler's fault. No, That's a reason Tom Thibodeau got fired, was because of the way he handled this. So there's been equal blame to go around. And believe me, the organization is not without fault in how this was handled. But Jimmy Butler's got a lot of fault in how it was handled, too. He didn't handle this in a professional manner.
Sure.
The Wolves dropped the ball, but Jimmy Butler didn't help them.
Regarding the infamous practice, this kind of ruined it for me, the mythology of this practice, in which Butler returned to the Wolves with an expletive-laced flourish and took on more established rotation players with lesser-used players, Rose writes, scored one time in that practice.
Then they were all writing about. And said, you bleeping need me.
He said, yes, one basket, right hand up to God. What's so exciting about that? But the media is going crazy. You would think he scored 30. It was killing Tibbs, I tell you. He wasn't saying anything to us, but you could tell he was taking it hard.
Well, and Jimmy said that. Jimmy has said that publicly. He said that, I believe on J.J. Redick's podcast on The Ringer, he said that he dominated that scrimmage without scoring. He said he took one shot. But he said he dominated defensively. He dominated passing the ball, that he made it known just how important he was and everything that he could do during that scrimmage against the starters without having to actually score. He wanted to embarrass them by being the one that didn't actually have to embarrass them because he wanted to show them how weak they were.
Actually kind of makes it a little more impressive.
Like, I don't think that's news.
He was guarding Cat in the post too, apparently. Like,
yeah.
Cat was posting up and Jimmy was guarding him and knocking the ball away from him and all of that stuff.
It's a pretty great story. I mean, whether or not you like Jimmy Butler or not.
It's interesting.
If you've ever been a disgruntled employee, like you wanted to do what Jimmy Butler did. If you ever hated your boss and felt like...
See, I wouldn't, though. I would want to score all the points. I'd want to have 50. Like, yeah. I wouldn't care about my teammates in that sense. If I'm scrimmaging the starters, I'm scoring every bucket.
I mean, either way, it's pretty damn good.
Filling up that stat sheet.
He's a man of the people. On arriving with the Wolves and then coach Tom Thibodeau late in the 2017-2018 season, Rhodes says, with Minnesota, Tibbs was honest. Even when he didn't play me when I first got there, he was just telling me they have certain people here. They feel like they need to play certain people. He was just telling me to stick with him. I stuck with him, and he looked out for me. That's one of the reasons I stuck with him, and he wanted to come back. The line in there that popped out to me was that Tibbs told him they have certain people here. They feel like they need to play certain people.
I think you're probably reading into that a little bit too much. I think that was probably more so Jamal Crawford, who was the sixth man here in the year that they made the playoffs, mm-hmm. as opposed to an Andrew Wiggins or Jimmy Butler. Like, it was more so at Jamal Crawford's been our sixth man all year, and he wasn't terrible. It wasn't like he was a bad player for them. And I think it's also hard to incorporate someone that needs the volume and the usage rate of Derrick Rose when he doesn't play a game for you until, what, March? Mm-hmm. That's hard when you're in the playoff race. That's a hard thing to incorporate. I give Thibodeau no fault for that.
Okay, the Jimmy Butler stuff, it's in the past. That's, I don't think that has any effect on this team moving forward. The trade, I mean, whatever the trade turned out to be, those players will do what they do, and that's the impact that it'll have on the future. But mm-hmm. as far as any drama or whatever was stirred up because of Jimmy Butler, I think that's over. When I read that line, and whether it's about Jamal Crawford or Andrew Wiggins or anybody else, although I got to believe that there is some sort of directive to play Andrew Wiggins and try and unlock him. I got to believe that there is some kind of directive to that effect. But regardless of who Tom Thibodeau is talking about, Tom Thibodeau was brought in and told, and Wolves fans were told, that he was being brought in to overhaul this organization, that he was the coach and president of basketball operations. He was going to be given the power to run this team. And it always rubs me the wrong way. And I think it's a recipe for failure when you bring a guy in to do a job and then start telling him how to do that job.
I understand that, but it's hard to incorporate. Derrick Rose didn't play his first game with the Wolves until March 3rd. But if that's 3rd.
All, and not to say that if they had given Tibbs total autonomy, that it would have worked. I'm just saying that when you say you're going to do that, do it. We don't know if it would have worked or not. And I said the same thing when it blew up in Chicago when he left the Bulls. Tom Thibodeau definitely deserves a lot of the blame for things going wrong in Chicago and his relationship with the front office there and everything that went wrong here with the Wolves. He's not free of blame, and that's not at all what I'm saying. But the thing we tend to do is when there is a breakdown in a relationship, not just in sports, just in general, whether it's celebrity gossip or in our own lives or whether it's a trade or somebody being fired in professional sports, we always want to blame one side and point a finger, when in reality, there's probably blame to go around. I don't think it's right to hire Tom Thibodeau, hand him the keys to the organization, and then at certain times say, yeah, we're going to need those keys back.
I don't think that this is nearly as big of a deal as you're trying to make it out to be. And you do have to play the guys that you're playing. The backcourt was more crowded that year than it was now. And you had guys that had been playing all season that you can't bench for a Derrick Rose who had not been very good and had been hurt he went AWOL in Cleveland.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying that's Tibbs' choice to make. And what disturbs me about that is...
It was Tibbs' choice to bring in Jamal Crawford, and that's who he had to play.
Okay, but he was obviously being told certain guys need to play.
Yeah, the guys that are being paid need to play. That's how it works, Rami.
Okay.
You can't be playing. You can't play a guy that's on a minimum contract that was just out of the NBA over a guy that had been there and performed well for you all year.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that you either give the power to Tom Thibodeau or you don't. And the reason why this concerns me more than anything else of these quotes that we read is because we're being told the same thing right now about Gerson Rosas.
I think
he's being
far
he's
into
being
this.
Given autonomy and power to run this organization. And is he?
I think he is. I think you're making too big of a deal for this win. A guy that was out of the league for a month, went AWOL in one organization, was cut by another organization that nobody in the NBA wanted. I think that Tibbs probably wanted to tell Derek something because he saw something in him. It wasn't going to work out this year, but it could work out in the future. And Tibbs and Derek Rose obviously had quite a bit of a relationship.
Sure.
And he wanted to take care of him in the future. And that was his way of doing it.
Manny, am I digging too deep here?
I will just say this. Tom Thibodeau knows more about basketball than I could ever even imagine. But I'm not shedding a tear for him at all.
I'm not either.
In this entire situation.
This has less to do with Tom Thibodeau and more to do with, is this how this organization is continuing to be run? Where we're told guys have power and autonomy, when in reality there are certain things they're being told they have to do.
But Tom Thibodeau, like Danny said, Tom Thibodeau signed Jamal Crawford. Tom Thibodeau gave Gorgui Dieng an extension. Tom Thibodeau signed Andrew Wiggins to this extension. They didn't have to do that. He didn't have to do that. I mean, everything that happened, Tom Thibodeau made the trade for Jimmy Butler because he wanted his guy. He wanted to bring in his guy. Tom Thibodeau was the one who didn't look at this entire situation and say, okay, can this really work? Can Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins and Jeff Teague and all these guys, can this really work out with this collection of players? And the answer to that was no. And Tom Thibodeau signed off on all of that stuff. Rather or not, there were people, you know, if Glenn Taylor was chirping in his ear or if, you know, Scott Layden was having conversations about what they should do, all that. Tom Thibodeau was the primary decision maker for everything that happened with this team over the last three seasons.
When I hire a primary decision maker, the second I lose faith in his decision making and I feel the need to tell him certain things, I just fire him.
And they waited too long to do that.
Exactly. Exactly. They obviously lost faith in Tom Thibodeau and were handing down directives when he was supposed to be the one who has control.
But also, are you going to play Derrick Rose over?
That's not even my point. You're missing the point. I'm not saying that what they were telling him to do was the wrong thing. I'm just saying you either give him power and autonomy or you don't.
And you don't know that someone was telling Tibbs that.
Telling him what?
To not play Derrick Rose. You don't know that he didn't just tell Derrick Rose that to take care of him.
That's possible.
You don't know that's entirely truthful.
That's entirely possible.
You don't know that.
You're right. That is entirely possible. One more paragraph from the Rose book. Talking about the tough love mentoring of younger players. Says, I want to play a few more years. It's crazy to think I'm already at 10 years with everything that's happened. Way more than most guys get to play. I've been blessed. It feels right again. If the biggest problem in Minnesota is dealing with kids, I'm cool with that. That's something that's fixable. He says, do you think it's fixable and there's any chance that Derrick Rose is in Minnesota next year?
I don't know that he'll be here next year, in part because I'm not sure how much he fits what they want to do. He's not a good defender, and I know they are looking for defensive pieces. And I think that they're probably not comfortable with the money that he could potentially demand. And one of the best abilities is availability, and Derrick Rose has shown he can't stay on the floor, and that matters.
I thought the line was interesting about Karl Anthony Towns. He's cool, and he's good. But these kids, then he talks about how they get spoiled. Was that a shot? Was that like a veiled? Because Derrick Rose isn't a guy who's like take a blatant shot at somebody. He's just not that dude.
It sort of was.
That's about as close as he gets to selling a guy short or taking a shot at him.
Sure. And yeah, I don't see a reunion happening.
No.
That line to me just sounds more like a guy who's been in the league for 10 years talking about a guy who's only been in the league for 4 years.
Right.
I don't know if that was like a direct shot at Karl Anthony Towns specifically. I just think that was a guy who's been in the league for a decade talking about a guy who's 23 and been in the league for 4 years.
Sounds like an interesting book.
It's a very old school mentality thing.
Yeah.
It's what it is.
I can't give the young buck credit or too much dap because his head will get big?
Sort of, yes.
You think that's what's going on here?
Sort of, yeah.
Do we have more Wolves things to discuss, or you want to get into some NBA Finals?
We can discuss whatever you would like.
Let's get into some NBA Finals after this.
Let's do it.
Might have to start giving Steve Kerr some credit as like a head coach.
He's a really good coach. Right. I don't understand why people don't think he's a really good coach. He's a really good coach.
Raised by Wolves, Score North on 1500 and the Score North mobile app.
Score North.
And what's that supposed to mean?
Minnesota sports. Anytime, anywhere. ScoreNorth.com.
Join Jonathan Harrison and Dan Terhar this Saturday night for Score North's coverage of Minnesota United and the Colorado Rapids pregame at 7:30 p.m. Kickoff at 8 right here on Score North, ScoreNorth.com, and the Score North mobile app.
Livingston has it. Back to Iguodala. Iguodala puts it up. It's gone. Andre Iguodala drills it with 5.9 remaining. What a clutch shot from the veteran.
Mike Breen is really good at what he does on ESPN.
So good.
Really, really, really good at what he does.
Top of the line.
This is Raised by Wolves on Score North on 1500 and the Score North mobile app. Rami Makhlouf along with Danny Cunningham, Manny Hill on the other side of the glass. And with that, the Warriors evened up the NBA Finals at a game apiece. They'll move on to Game 3 tonight. And the series moves to Oakland tonight as the Warriors stole home court advantage, I should say, away from the Raptors in that Game 2. That's basically it, right?
I wouldn't say that.
It's basically over at this point, is it not?
I wouldn't say it's basically over, especially with the injuries that Golden State's dealing with. Toronto can absolutely win this series.
I came into the series not really giving the Raptors a chance. I said I'm done falling for the old okey-doke that the Warriors keep giving us of giving us reasons to doubt them and not believe in them, and then they flip that switch.
Was that it, really?
We realized they're unbeatable.
Were you just mad?
No. No, I said this when they knocked off the Rockets without Kevin Durant. I started saying this then.
Sure.
Regardless, but
that was before Klay Thompson got hurt, before Kevon Looney broke his collarbone.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, it matters.
It doesn't matter.
They catch up to you.
It doesn't matter. They're going to win this series.
They very well might, but it's not a done deal.
If the Raptors had any chance of winning this series, they could not let the Warriors take a game in Toronto. They're not going to win in Oakland.
Go take a game in Oakland.
They're not going to win in Oakland.
They can absolutely win in Oakland. The Clippers won in Oakland twice.
I'm telling you, it ain't happening.
If the Clippers can win in Oakland twice, the Raptors, who have already won in Oakland this year, can win in Oakland again.
They hadn't flipped the switch yet. A switch has been flipped.
Yeah, the switch for the hospital beds.
I think Toronto's got a great shot to win tonight.
I do, too.
I think they got a great shot
to win
tonight.
I'm not saying they're going to win this series, but it's absolutely a possibility. It's not a foregone conclusion that the Warriors are winning this one.
I think you guys are convincing yourselves of this because you want an entertaining NBA Finals.
It has been entertaining so far.
But, I mean, you want some doubt as to how this is going to end.
There is doubt.
There really isn't.
Yes, there is.
There absolutely is doubt. I'm telling you, the Warriors are good.
If Klay Thompson's not playing, you don't know how close Kevin Durant is because that's been a very strange situation.
Yeah, and he's out tonight.
Durant is not going to play tonight.
And if Klay Thompson doesn't play tonight, you got...
Who else can hit shots on that team?
You're rolling with Steph and Draymond.
If you are counting on Quinn Cook, I like my chances if I'm the Raptors. If you have to count on Quinn Cook to win you a finals game, he very well could do it. But I like my chances if I'm Toronto, if that's the case.
And I mean, you still have Steph Curry. DeMarcus Cousins finally stepped up.
But you don't know that that's what you're going to get from him every night. You don't know that he's a big question mark because of his injuries. He had a good night, but he had a really bad night in game one.
We still haven't seen the best of Draymond Green. I mean, this is just a very good basketball team. And for a lot of years, and again, this is something I've fallen for. I'm going to admit I'm as guilty of it as anybody. I think we all thought that this thing was sort of cruise control for Steve Kerr, like just put those guys out on the court and forget about it, and they're going to win games. I think we're starting to see it, or at least we should be starting to see and respect and recognize that Steve Kerr, for all the talent that he has, and there is certainly something to be said for that, but A, no coach ever won multiple titles without a lot of great talent.
No coach has ever won a title without a lot of great talent.
Exactly.
Just little secret, guys.
He pushes the buttons. He pushes the right buttons at the right time and pulls the right strings, and I think it's especially apparent when you don't have a Kevin Durant, when Klay Thompson goes down with an injury and Quinn Cook is hitting three big threes, or Sean Livingston is giving you substantial minutes. I mean, now they're without Kevon Looney, and I'm just confident that Steve Kerr will find a way to replace what he brings to this team.
I think the one thing that Golden State has going for them tonight, if Klay Thompson doesn't play, we know KD is out. If Klay Thompson doesn't go tonight, the one thing Golden State has in their favor is that they're going to be at home. Mm-hmm. And they are a very tough team to beat in that building multiple times. Then again, we did see the LA Clippers win there twice in mm-hmm. the first round. And
it's not like they haven't lost finals games there before.
Yeah.
And in this run, they've lost three finals games at Oracle. And it's not as if it hasn't happened.
And here's the thing. The Toronto Raptors fell down 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals. And a lot of people were doubting them, too. And a lot of people thought...
One in this room, actually.
A lot of people thought the Milwaukee Bucks were going to cruise onto the NBA Finals. And honestly, at that point, I'll admit, too, I thought the Raptors were going to be done.
Not me.
Game two, with how bad the Raptors looked in game two especially, I thought the Raptors were done. I thought they'd make it a series, but I thought the Bucks just looked like ultimately the better team in that series. And then the Raptors ran off four straight.
See, I didn't really put a lot of stock in terms of changing how I felt about that series after game one. And when the Bucks didn't look great, and I didn't put a lot of stock into changing how I felt about that series after game two when the Raptors didn't look so great.
Mm-hmm.
And I never
that's because you felt great about the Bucks to begin with.
But I never thought the Bucks were going to run away from the Raptors in that series
or win it in five.
I said six. I said Bucks in six. I have the tweets to prove it. I have the receipts.
Thank you, Brandon Jennings.
I said Bucks in six, partly because I wanted to be there for game six when they clinched it and be part of the celebration as I was going home from Memorial Day weekend. But the Bucks aren't the Warriors. The Bucks are not the Warriors, and I was not...
Right now, the Warriors aren't the Warriors.
They still are. Sure are.
That's the thing. The Warriors aren't the Warriors right now. If this were the Warriors, how can you say obviously still are? They've won one close game. The Warriors right now are not the Warriors. Kevin Durant's out. Klay Thompson is not himself. DeMarcus Cousins is still recovering from a torn quad. Yes, Steph Curry's been solid, and Draymond Green had a rough game one and had a good game two, but this is not the Warriors right now that we're talking about. They're far from full health. But I would agree with you, if everyone was healthy, yes, the series would probably look over in five or six, but that's not the case, so I think it's kind of asinine to think that.
It's not the first time I've been asinine or been accused of being asinine, but I look at this team and I'm done doubting them. I've gone down this road too many times before, and maybe if Klay Thompson misses is more than tonight's game.
Even if he plays and he's not 100%, if he can't give you stuff on the defensive end,
he's so vital to what they do.
That hamstring injury looked bad. That it did not look good. He was limping yesterday at practice. Like, it is going to be a tough thing for him to be able to play.
Then Steve Kerr said he thinks he will be able to play. No decision has been made. But
Klay would try and play if he were half dead.
Right, if his leg was hanging.
Like, yes, if his leg, with the exception of his leg actually getting cut off, Klay would be on the floor because that's the type of person he is.
Right.
And how much of that, too, is Steve Kerr just in some ways trying to convince himself that Klay is going to be available? I mean, last year, the Rockets, Chris Paul had the same injury. And everybody was wondering, guys, is Chris Paul going to be able to go? And the reality was, he was never going to be able to go in that Game 7 for the Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up being the difference in that series, obviously. So, Rami, I think you're underestimating how vital Klay Thompson is to what the Warriors do on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I mean
his ability to shoot as well as Steph does, that actually takes a lot of pressure off of Steph and allows Steph to be even more free to roam around and get himself open for great looks. And on the defensive side, too, I mean, Klay is their best perimeter defender.
Yeah, he's a great defender.
His mobility is going to be absolutely complicated tonight. Defensively, he won't be very good. There's no doubt in my mind about that. He will not be able to be a very good defender on the perimeter tonight with a hamstring injury. Now, he could still probably make shots. I don't know how he's going to go about getting open. It's going to be hard for him to run off screens quite as well as he's been able to do. But defensively, he's going to be compromised.
And hamstrings are tricky, man.
Absolutely. And look what the Raptors were able to do defensively down the stretch of that game where they played a box and one on Steph. If they can do that, and I know Steph called it a bit of a janky defense and that the Warriors made them pay for it, but they really didn't.
I've been hearing a lot of of people talking about the box of wood since.
Well, because it was interesting. It's something you don't see often in an NBA game, but the Warriors really did struggle in that fourth quarter to score. I know Andre Iguodala made the three-pointer late, but they struggled to score the ball. They could have put that game away. They were up 106-97, and it got close because the Raptors played good defense. The only points that they scored in the last 5 minutes of that game was Andre Iguodala's three.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
I know. So it's not as if they made them pay for it. The Raptors figured something out defensively and just couldn't hit enough shots at the end of that game.
Right. And I think that the Raptors, some of their players are coming back down to earth. And not to disrespect or say any of these guys are not great players, but Pascal Siakam has a very bright future in this league. He played a little bit over his head in the Bucks series and in the first game of this series.
I don't think he did in the Bucks series, but game one of this series he did. He's not going to go 14-17 from the floor, but I don't think he played over his head in the Bucks series.
I think we all knew Fred Van Vliet was going to come back down to earth at some point and still had 17 points in the last game. I think there's still more of a drop coming for Van Vliet.
I think Fred Van Vliet is 2015 Matthew Dellavedova with a K.
That's probably a good analogy. That's a really good analogy. We probably saw more from Marcus Sol in game one than we'll see in the rest of this series.
He's a really good player.
He's lost a step.
You might not get 20 points from him every night because he's just not going to shoot the ball that well, but it's not out of the realm of possibility for him to repeat that performance.
I thought he was a really good player. I thought he would just be matchup right out of this series if the Warriors went small and ran circles around him.
Well, they don't have the players to do that right now. They have to have a center on the floor. Now it probably shifts to advantage Raptors because they don't even have Kevon Looney. They're going to have to play Jordan Bell some minutes tonight, and Andrew Bogut and Marc Gasol can absolutely play against those guys.
You guys think I'm underestimating the value of Klay Thompson? I'm not. He's a very good player. I think you're underestimating the Warriors' ability to just find a way to win and championship pedigree.
Those things do matter, but I think that you're overestimating just how much because the Raptors have a guy with that too.
Game three tonight, we'll see how asinine I am when this series plays out, and I'm sure there'll be more talk about it when we next meet up on Raised by Wolves. For Danny Cunningham, Manny Hill, I'm Rami Makhlouf saying thanks for listening. Talk to you next time on Score North on 1500 and the Score North mobile app.